New Zealand-based home renovation company, 6,593% ROAS. Sydney-based solar company, 2,700% ROAS. Hunter region-based bathroom renovation company, 5,616% ROAS. Melbourne-based building company, 13,182% return on ad spend. Adelaide-based solar company, 2,881% return on ad spend. Guys, the list goes on and on. If you're a trade-based business and you work with projects like roofing, solar, bathroom renovations, kitchen renovations, anything like that, head across to tradie.wiki/pod for podcast. tradie.wiki/pod for podcast. Book in a conversation. It is game changing. Hey, it's Matt Jones here. If you want to check out the video version of this podcast, click on the first link in the description.
You know, before social media, you know, they'd call a dozen people and try to get a quote from all of them. You know, with content creation, people start becoming in your sphere. And like they start like enjoying your content, enjoying who your business is.
For our part two of the podcast, our guest, Weston Zimmerman,
founder of a tech startup for business management software called SyncUp.
He talks about the value of setting a daily minimum and the need to focus on higher revenue projects to sustain his business.
I can't afford to do that little one-off job anymore. My daily minimum is, say, $5,000 or whatever it is.
I really want this to stay up because this is like the perfect...
to educate the customer as to what things cost. I think that was hard.
Very hard to grow past that. Weston, welcome back to the SiteShed podcast.
Good to be back with you, Matt.
You're joining us today for episode two of the How Contractors Can Thrive, Not Just Survive series that we put together here. Episode one, for you guys that missed that, we were talking about the two ways that contractors can lose or make money. And those two ways, just a bit of a spoiler alert, were math and pricing. And then we talked a bit about the production capacity there. This episode is... In this episode, we talk about sales process. We talk about how you guys can close deals. So you probably want to go back and check episode one out if you haven't already. This episode will probably tie into it, I would imagine. Anyway, Weston, welcome back. As I said before, you're from Synced Up over in the US. So thanks for joining us once again.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to be with you. And I'm looking forward to, I really enjoyed the last chat and looking forward to this one.
Yeah, in episode one, I really love conversations that help, I suppose, listeners and viewers just really get some concept around like the budgeting and forecasting aspect of the business. Because in my experience, it's the one thing that really helps you create that roadmap to get to the end game, you know. And that and the beauty, I think, of forecasting and budgeting is you're almost, when you have that end goal and you can break down, reverse engineer, you know, those bite-sized chunks to help you get there, in almost every instance, you get there faster than you expected to.
Yeah. It's like, okay, I want to make a $1 million business. Sure. Who doesn't? Well, how do I get that? Well, let's figure out how to do a $1,000 job.
Right.
100 times.
Exactly. And then it's like, oh, that's all I've got to do. That means I've just got to sell two of these a week.
You're right. Exactly. It's like start with the end in mind, break it down into quarterly, monthly, and then what do I have to do this week and what I have to do today?
Yeah. I just think it makes so much sense. And of course, the budgeting aspect of it, really speaking to the financials, but like as you just alluded to there, like when you break those financials down into actual things, like I need to sell two of these a week to become a $1 million business.
Yes.
Like that's like a polarizing view.
Yes. And what can happen is, you know, as you grow your business, you grow like the overhead infrastructure and the costs it takes to keep your business doors open and all of that. And suddenly, this is what a lot of contractors forget. Suddenly they realize like, oh, I can't afford to do that little one-off job anymore. I have to be producing a higher revenue per man hour rate. And so my daily minimum is say $5,000 or whatever it is. Like I don't care if you're landscaping, I don't care if I'm planting five shrubs, it's going to be $5,000. Like that's my minimum. And then, so that kind of really helps you say no to the things that, wow, sure, in that little job, you might be able to make a profit, but what about you didn't produce enough overall to meet your goals.
Sure. Yeah. And I think as well, that whole, like the problem that you see a lot of businesses make, and like I would at times have been guilty of it myself, you know, where you think, okay, well, the goal is the number, like the goal, okay, we want to be 100K a month business or whatever. And it's like, it's not, it's like you said before, it's kind of a lag effect. Like what you really should be doing is selling 10 units at 10K. Mm-hmm. Like we need to sell 10 of these units. It's not we need to reach 100K, like, because there's no real, there's nothing really that ties that to what you do. You know, it's really, how do we get, how do we understand what the products is, what our price points are, and how many of them we need, how many units we need to sell to achieve that number. That number is the after. That's what comes as a result exactly. of doing the thing, right?
Yeah, the $1 million business on your P&L at the end of the year, that's the after. What's the daily revenue? What's the daily man hours you need? What's the, you know, all of that?
Yeah. I think that's where a lot of businesses trip up with planning. You know, they put too much emphasis on the number and not on the thing that gets mm-hmm. them the number.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I agree. And breaking that quarterly, you know, monthly down into daily, like, this is what we need to be doing daily. And the beauty of when you do that and when you're tracking it is, like, if you're a week or two and you've got those numbers in front of you, it's like, okay, well, we haven't made any sales this week. Like we're off track now to hit our monthly, which, like, that is way more useful than being at the end of the month and going, oh, we didn't hit our numbers.
Let's go back and have a look. It's too late now. It's too late to do anything about it at that point.
You really just want to be able to turn the screws at a micro level, because it's those micro level improvements that really, you know, move the needle for you holistically. It's like the whole Arnold Schwarzenegger 1% improvement, you know, mentality. Like, it's so true. It's those micro improvements that make the big difference, you know.
And even better is if you can expose what those North Stars are for your team members. Because if your team members know that, dude, we got to hit, you know, we have 100 hours to do this job. It's a 3-day job. And, dude, we came in at 80. Awesome. Everybody's high-fiving. Like, if you can give your team what success looks like, that is huge. Because the A players, good people, want to know what success looks like. Nobody, you know, good people don't want to be clock punchers.
Right. So we're here today to talk a little bit about sales process and closing deals. And I definitely feel like I've got a bit of insight here, you know, from being on the ground with a lot of businesses that we work with in our agency. Like, as the big, one of the big things that we, like, I mean, we're essentially a lead generation business for certain verticals within the trades. And the number one bottleneck that we run into, it doesn't matter what size, but we've got clients that are doing anywhere from, you know, 30, 40K months up to $1 million a month. And every single business that we work with, their immediate bottleneck after we solve the lead problem is sales process. 100% of the time, without question, regardless of how big the business is. And it's not because they're bad at sales. It's just because when you add in a different stream of lead source, for example, and ours predominantly at this point is cold traffic, you need to know how to evolve your sales process to work for cold traffic. Otherwise, whatever you're doing over here with referrals and warm leads and that warm, fuzzy little world you come out of, you throw into this cold snake pit of, you know, cold traffic leads, all of a sudden that model falls over.
It does.
So, like, sales process is so important. And it's not, like I said before, it's just an evolution of something. It's not necessarily what they're doing is wrong over there. It's just that it needs to evolve to be able to account for, you know, this different style of lead generation and things like that.
And now you're raising the bar. Now, like, I'm just showing you some homegrown tactics that worked for us. Now we'll see how in line they are with what you feel success looks like, or whether these are just hillbilly methods that worked for us here in Appalachian Mountains in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I mean, I dare say there's going to be a lot of similarities. Truthfully, that's the biggest obstacle that, you know, that I think that we need to overcome when clients come on board with us is it's they come from this mindset where, well, first of all, they've never really had to market. And therefore, they've never had to account for things like marketing budget, you know, because they've never had to, right? Like, leads, if they're getting referrals and it's pretty much job sold, it's like, well, Bill and Sally used you and now we want to use you. It's like, okay, well, do I even need to do a proposal for this, or can we just start work kind of situation?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden now you're like, okay, well, you know, we need to be spending money on ads. We need to be spending money. We have overheads. We have, you know, operational expenses we didn't have before. There's all these different, you know, dynamics. We need to be measuring return on ad spend. We need to be returning ROI. What is ROI? Like most businesses, okay, well, you know, sure. Like what, how do we, ROI, there's a lot of variables that could be thrown into ROI, you know, so we've got to get clarity around these numbers. So people like they're tracking the green curve, you know.
100%.
So I think this conversation is going to be extremely relevant to, well, in my experience anyway, and, you know, when we're dealing with businesses that have come out of like this world where, I mean, predominantly it's like referral based, and then they're moving into a world where they know they need to spend on marketing in order to grow. And the overarching problem here is you cannot scale word of mouth. And you can't scale referrals.
No, it's you. There's no dial you can crank.
Correct. You will, we've run the numbers on this in the past, and it's a bit of an aggregate number, but like typically, trade business as a whole. And look, the variables there are you get builders and, you know,
right,
guys that are building homes that are worth $1 million, and all of a sudden they win one job and they're like, we're a $1 million business. Whatever, like. So, but the general consent, like numbers that we ran for home service, so, you know, plumbers, electricians, maybe landscapers and that kind of thing, is your word of mouth and referral based business will normally cap out at about 500-600K a year. It's very hard to grow past that.
Interesting. Yeah. That's a metric I never went chasing. So that's really interesting.
Yeah. And you just max out your resources at that point. At the point where you just decide, okay, we want to scale the business, we want to grow the business, you need to have a predictable model in place so you can forecast growth, because you can't forecast referrals. You can't forecast word of mouth. Like some months you'll get 10 referrals, the next month you'll get 2.
Yeah, exactly. and you can't control it other than calling your customers and saying, do you know anybody?
Just being a pest, exactly.
Yeah.
So there becomes a point where you need to be proactively building that database and, you know, and marketing for new work. And that, by the way, should never, ever, ever come at the cost of neglecting your existing customers, but you need to be replenishing and you need to be adding to that, you know, that constant list.
Absolutely. And like what I see overall is like in this transition of going from referrals to more sustainable growth or predictable growth is what happens is, like, to your point, the sales process for word of mouth breaks very quickly. Like you can't spend 4 hours trying to get a quote together on a lead, a cold traffic lead that you have no idea if they're going to buy from you or not. You know, there's got to be a process in place so that you're not spending your time on them until they've been sufficiently vetted.
It's really interesting that you talk about that, because the biggest emphasis that we put on the sales process starts at discovery. It's that qualification part of the process, because when companies typically come to us, their metric for success is normally how many site visits can we get our guys out to. And that's like the win for them. When in reality, the metric for success should become how many jobs can we secure from site visits? How much cash collected? How many deposits taken? Whatever that looks like. So, you know, and that's a real flip. That sort of flips the whole model on its head. And again, this ties into what we were saying in the previous episode with like the whole, well, it ain't broke, don't fix it, or not really having those peripherals on, because you've always just get stuck in that cadence of doing something that you've always done because it's always worked. And truthfully, it may have worked, but there right. is often a better way to do something. And so the dynamic when you shift it from, okay, well, let's say going out to site as the success for the sales guys is the KPI, changing that KPI to when you go to site, you need to be in a cash collected scenario 50% of the time.
Yes.
That is a absolute conversion multiplier.
Yeah. It's the difference between running all over the countryside with maybe a 10% close rate.
Correct.
And struggling to even close $1 million with a full-time salesperson versus, some of the principles that I have, like the four ways to close more jobs. Like Derek Matthews, the main lead salesperson at Tesla Landscaping, was one of those guys running all over the countryside, barely closing jobs. And last year he closed $5.5 million by himself with a 92% close rate.
Whoa. Yeah, that's amazing.
And you know, he's pretty exceptional what he does. But the point is like, he didn't win that by trying to maximize how many site visits he did.
Sure. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's like a really big shift for businesses when they can understand that as part of their sales process, they need to get super detailed with this. We call it discovery, but essentially like whatever triage, whatever you want to call it, but that qualification process. And I think as well, like, you know, people need to understand when you've got your, like, it's okay to turn work away. You sort of alluded to it before. Like, okay, we can't afford to be doing these $1,000 jobs anymore. Like, we can't hit our targets if we do.
Yeah.
So it sort of enables you to really sort of be a bit more polarizing with who the jobs you take on. And that truthfully is sort of the advantage of having regular quality leads coming in. Like, you can be a bit more picky and choosy.
Yes.
We've got clients that have been like, okay, you know, 4 or 5 months down the track, they're like, you know what? I don't want to be doing these 20, 30K bathrooms anymore. I want to be doing 40 to 60.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's a conversation you can't really have until you get momentum and you've
that's
got
a,
that.
Yeah. And that's a huge luxury. That's one of the best positions you can be in, is when you can start being choosy about the work that you do.
Yeah, exactly. And so we've seen some really awesome success with our clients. Like, we've been able to help a lot of them implement, you know, remote site visits and all this kind of stuff, so they can take on more, do more of them a day. Where you know, if they're physical site visits, they might do four a day max.
Right.
You know, if they're lucky, whereas remote they can do, you know, 7, 8, 9.
and watch the numbers play out on that over a year.
Well, that's right. And with discovery done correctly, like, they're closing well and truly over 50% of them, like, from a remote visit. They're not even going, they're just sitting in an office, you know, like, it's crazy.
That's incredible.
But overarching, the real advantage of it is you're just saving everyone time. Like, we have this, and again, because we've always done it, we have this mentality where we think it's okay to book our sales techs in to go do site visits without that site visit being properly qualified, because it seems like it's the right thing to do. But realistically, you're wasting everyone's time. You're wasting the client's time. Like, if they're not qualified and they're not going to go ahead, then why waste their time?
Exactly. And in fact, many times you're setting the client up to kind of feel embarrassed. And that's the worst experience you want to have. Like, maybe I thought I could afford this $20,000 bathroom. And I had a picture of a $40,000 bathroom, and I had an $8,000 budget, and I couldn't wait to talk to you until you got here and told me it was going to be 40 grand. Now I'm embarrassed.
Right.
Exactly. Nobody wants to feel that.
And that's one of the big things I think people don't bring up early enough is price.
Yeah. Well, that's part of the vetting process. 100%. And it's not about, you know, so many times, at least in our industry in landscaping, you hear people say, well, what's the contractor's question is, what's your budget? And I don't like that.
No.
Because, well, whatever, just because.
I know exactly why, and I agree with you. And I think that, so part of that conversation really should be in the early stages of discovery. It's like, well, listen, but based on what you've told me, all the information you've given me, your project looks like it's going to be about a 20 to 25K project. Does that fit in with you guys? Like, you're not asking them, you're telling them.
Yeah, what you're really doing is you're not asking for a budget. You're educating the client as to what things cost.
Correct.
And there's ways you can do that without using your best salesperson's time.
Yeah, no, exactly. And again, I think that just if you're doing the groundwork in the early stages and they understand that, that's one obstacle you're not going to have to overcome.
Yeah.
Like, by the time you get there. Okay, I'm up for 25K here. That's fine.
Yeah.
Is that okay with you? Yes, great. No, I was thinking more around 6. Okay, can't help you.
Yeah. And by the time you get there, I love what you said earlier. You're in down payment collection mode. You're not, even if you're paying for site visit, or if clients are paying you for site visits or whatever, for, you know, there's people that do that. You're not, to your point about having the wrong metric, you're not going to make money by filling a salesperson's calendar full of site visits that haven't been vetted. That's not going to help you. You're also not in the business of collecting, in the landscape industry, as often in the US here, we call it consultation fees, like fees for me to come out to your place and give you a quote. That's cool, but you're not going to make money. You're not in business to collect consultation fees or do site visits. You're in business to collect down payment checks.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. So I think that mentality in the past has been the case of, well, I'll send my sales guy out there who I'll train the shit out of to just upsell and close deals. And you have that huge, like, buyer's remorse sort of obstacle you need to overcome. And I mean, this is why you see on, you know, these current affair programs all the time, like trade businesses getting stung, because they, you know, they go out there and they sell this old lady on all this stuff, you know, and all of a sudden she's, saw, you know, giving them their credit card. And then, you know, but like, you know, it happens all the time, right?
Yeah.
I think like, but being a little bit more transparent with like ballparks and, you know, the difference between an estimate and a quote, like understanding those things, like it really does make a huge difference in the sales process.
Yeah. And ballparks play a very good role. Like they're very effective at the right juncture in the sales process. Because like, you know, I mean, just imagine driving by an auto dealer and you see a car that you like. The question is, well, what's it cost? And if it's like way out of my budget, well, okay, fine. Now I know. Now I can stop thinking about it. But if it is within my budget, or I could save and make it be within my budget, now I know. It's just about – I'm not really a fan of being secretive about your pricing. People just need to know. It's nobody's either you can afford what I do or you can't. And the sooner we can answer that question, the better for both of us.
And here's one thing I'll say on that as well, and this is something that I've learned probably the hard way over the years, but we see it all the time with – like, as I say, like, you know, we work with project-based companies and their products, you know, typically start at 10 grand and they'll go up to $1 million, you know, for home builders and that kind of thing, right? It's very unlikely with – so the larger your ticket item is, the larger your sales cycle will be.
Yes.
In every case. If you're a home builder, your sales cycle will be could be 3-4 years.
It could be.
So when somebody comes to you – and an opportunity is created in your system, it doesn't necessarily, if they don't, it's very unlikely they're going to go ahead within a 3-month period. But what you've done is you've earned the opportunity and truthfully the obligation at that point and the responsibility to educate, nurture, and keep be useful with, to that person between the time they come to you and the time they decide to engage. And we don't know what that time frame will be, but it could be significant.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. It doesn't necessarily mean when somebody comes into your system as a lead that they're not going to go ahead at some point. It just means at that point, maybe that opportunity is not right for them. And that could be based on a number of variables. It could be straight up ignorance. They're not really understanding the dynamic of your service, what it costs, what's involved at their end, how many different stages there are. Like over, you know, over here, we have, you know, people that want to renovate their homes or, you know, build the homes and that kind of thing. They've got to go through this development application with council and all this kind of stuff. And those processes can take a year. Like there's things that are completely out of the hands of the builder, the homeowner. Like there's just things that need to be done in the right order in order for that project to be able to go ahead. So it doesn't mean that they're not ready, they're not keen and interested, but it just means right now there's things that need to be done before they can do that. And it might be saving money, and it could be lodging development application. It could be a number of different things.
Yeah.
But like if you're the guy that's, you know, proactive in when they come into your business, you know, educating, nurturing, keeping in contact, answering questions that commonly arise, showcasing projects, like stuff like that. Like that's how you're going to win that job.
100%. And that's what I love about content creation and what social media is for businesses today, or content creation is for businesses today, is by the time your phone rings or by the time that web form pings off on your website, it's a very good chance that that client or that customer has pretty well emotionally made up their mind about who they're going to hire if they're going to do the job. And as opposed to in the, you know, before social media, you know, they'd call a dozen people and try to get a quote from all of them. You know, with content creation, people will start becoming in your sphere and like they start like enjoying your content, enjoying who your business is. And like, they're like, dude, I may not be in the market to build a house for 10 years, but when I am, I know who I'm calling.
Right.
And they're calling that one person.
It's the key way to build trust and rapport and position yourself as an expert.
Yeah.
And it's truthfully the hardest thing for us to get clients to do is that, because I mean, and in fairness, I suppose to them, it's very foreign. Like they're used to climbing ladders and swinging hammers. They're not used to, you know, being on phone. Like it, you know, what's really, I find really interesting is like over the years, it doesn't matter. How good this, you know, the trade person is, like say you're a builder, that they will stand in front of that client face to face like we are now. They'll have this conversation with them in complete detail about how they can overcome all their problems and how they're going to do this and that and blah, 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 blah. And the second that you hold up a camera in front of your face, they clam up and turn into little school kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll have the conversation to your face, but put a camera there and they shit themselves. And it's just like, what the fuck, you know?
What just happened?
Right. So it's this fabricated fear, right? And when it's the second you get them overcoming that, they are off to the races. Like, it's amazing. Like, we've got one of our clients, you know, down in Adelaide, who's got this, he's got like million followers on TikTok or something. Like, it's insane, right? Like, he's overcome his content fear and he just does great stuff. And he crushes it, you know, like it's,
that's awesome.
Because he's built this trust and rapport and he's comfortable doing it. And of course, the thing is, when you go down that path, the second you start doing it, the second you start opening the doors to trolls. So if you're precious about, you know, or more importantly, if maybe you're not expecting it, you know, when you do get these negative comments and whatever, and people just being people on social media with nothing to do,
you just gotta get mentally past that. And another thing I like is negative comments or reviews or whatever are an opportunity to show who you really are. Like, what's your response?
Yeah. So we had, we're actually bringing out training on this because it was so awesome. Like, we were running like a round of recruitment jobs, and we have like a really like comprehensive and, truthfully, for the other person on the other side of the table, probably quite painful recruitment process, because that's the whole goal. Like, we want them to jump through some serious hoops if they're going to come work for us, and that's why we have really good retention, because
right. we put the them through the ringer.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, so we had one guy who got to like the third round of the recruitment process, and he didn't get the job. And he went and left like these reviews on Google. These guys are the worst company in the world and all this kind of stuff. And so I recorded the whole process, but it was essentially like, first thing I did was I went and checked his profile and how many reviews he's left. And I noticed that he'd only leave a review when something bad happened. He was never one of those guys that ever, you know, did like positive reviews. He's like, oh, this is my way to get back at people. And a lot of them were for people that didn't hire him. And so went and screenshot all these things. And so we use like a screen share software where you could actually create a URL. So it's saved, and I crafted this response, and it was this, and we train clients to do the same. Like, if it's a legitimate fuck up, own up to it. Like you said, like,
right.
How do you handle this properly? And make it good. But very often it's not. Very often it's bullshit. And so sometimes handling those reviews is way more powerful than trying to run away from them. And like, it's not a case of sticking your head in the sand. And so, you know, when I replied to this, I was like, well, actually, I'd outline the whole, you know, the reason why we have a large recruitment process is to eliminate people who don't want working for us. And in this instance, it's done its job, and let me show you why. And I went through this whole history of the conversations with him and, you know, all of his reviews and stuff like that. And sure enough, he pulled the review down because like, but me and the team, we were laughing about it because it was great. I was loving this. I was like, oh, please, I hope this stays
that was
up.
Good validation.
I really want this to stay up because this is like the perfect. So, of course, everything's
yeah, right.
So
you can't get it any better. The proof is there. Everything.
Right. But anyway. So, yeah, I think the the, like, going back to that whole like, focus on like being useful, you know, like, as opposed to like so many.
Yeah, you're the expert.
Like, in the interest of trying to improve your close rate and your sales process, like, normally people don't go ahead with something because they don't understand something, or there's like some disconnect with what you're providing and what they want or think they want. That's another thing as well, right? Like, a lot of people don't really know what they want. Like, we get all the time clients ring up and say, oh, yeah, I want a new website. Why? I want my phone to ring more. I'm like, okay, well, you might need a website, but you probably need to drive traffic to the website. Like, they don't really understand, right? And it's the same in any business. Like, you need to be that authority, that trusted expert, where you can say, hey, listen, this isn't going to help you get your outcome. This is what's going to help you get your outcome. You need to understand this and taking people through that journey, but using content to do it. Like, that is such a big mover in like the sales process realm.
Yeah.
Like, because people understand, they know, like, and trust you. Like, we get so many leads and clients that come through the podcast because they're like, we've been listening to you for years. We know, like, and trust you, you know, like, they're ready to go. Like,
You didn't even know they existed other than they were a listener stat on your podcast. And then bam, it's a slam dunk from a customer.
Exactly. And we see the same for clients. Like, we just put together a simple, and I always say to guys, the best place to start is just answer the top five questions that you get asked on replay.
Right. Yeah. And have that content and then ship it to them before if you do a sales call, ship it to them before the sales call.
Exactly. Manage the objections before they come objections.
Yes. And like, you know, that's actually one of the key, but like at Tusky Landscaping, what we did, I don't know if in your sphere, if a thing like a consultation fee to come out to your place and do a quote for high-end jobs is even a thing, but that's what one of the things we did was in filtering our leads was to those actually the very first move we did, like back in the early days when we were salespeople running all over the countryside trying to close deals at low conversion rates. We installed a consultation fee into the sales process, and suddenly we probably lost a job or two here and there, but we cut out all of the tire kickers, which not only did it stop wasting our time, but now we also had more time to waste on more time to spend on the serious people, right? The people that are going to buy from you. Mm-hmm. And so it's a double whammy, and that consultation fee, I mean, and people sometimes get hung up like, I'm not going to charge a customer to, you know, come out and give them a quote. Everybody else does free estimates. And it's like, well, do what you want. The point of the consultation fee is not the money. It's the fact that a transaction is taking place. I don't care if you charge a dollar, you know, it's a filtering method. And if you can do a better filtering method than a consultation fee and it works better for your clientele and your business, knock yourself out. I don't care. It's a filtering thing.
Yeah, no, 100%. And this is one of the reasons why we get, like, the thing is as well, like, for a lot of our clients, like, they'll have to go and prepare, like, say a builder, for example, is doing a renovation. It could take them 3 days to put together like a detailed quote of what they need to be doing there. Like, why should you not get paid for that? You know, and like, this is the ultimate like disqualifier for us. I just say to the guys, like, if they're not prepared to pay you for your time to make sure that you've got everything accounted for so you can deliver the project well and on time, they're sure as shit not going to pay you $500,000 to do the job. Yeah,
that's right.
Like, if they don't value that upfront work to make sure it's being done right initially, then you don't want to be working with them.
No.
And I think the difference, like, that we've seen is so many of them try and say, oh, we charge for our quotes. And that's a mistake because the guy down the road does free quotes.
Exactly.
So quote and quote, one's free, one's charged. So you've really got to put a different spin on it. Like, you're essentially building out this project analysis. And we charge for it because it takes me 3 days to do it. And you wouldn't expect me to work for nothing for 3 days, would you? No, cool. Like, you can deduct that cost off their first invoice if you want, like, whatever you have to do. Like, we've got clients in the building space that charge 12 grand for it, for their preliminary. and they do them all the time, but they don't need a lot of them. They don't need, it's not a numbers game, right? They need a handful. They don't need a lot.
Right.
And that's their angle on it. It's like, look, we charge 12 grand for this, but I can tell you right now, if we don't do this, you're going to be hit with a shit ton of variations along the way. And I don't want to do that to you. Like, I want to do the work up front so that we can eliminate any of that stuff.
Yeah. And that's a better client experience.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if they're serious, they're going to do it.
100%. Yeah. They're going to, if that is a deal breaker, well, then there's the trust isn't there yet or what have you. But you hit on something a little bit ago that is actually aligns with a thing that made a big difference for us in our company at Tusk Landscaping. And that was the whole thing of being able to speed up quote turnaround time. And I know this depends, like, if you're building houses, that's a whole different animal. But if you're doing, you know, what we were doing was $50,000 to $100,000 outdoor living projects with lighting and landscaping and patios and that kind of thing. Like, we got that from a process in the early days, a 2 to 3 day process down to literally a 10 to 15 minute process that we could give them a quote before we even got out of the driveway. And that's where it comes back to, I'm pulling into your driveway to pick up a check, you know, but that could only happen when we built the systems and processes required to turn that 3 day process into a 10 minute process through the use of templates and production rates and automating the math and all of these variables that And that takes time to do. Like speeding up your quote turnaround process really is building systems and processes that reverse engineers what often in the early days is the magic inside of the owner operator's head. You know,
I'll tell you the big shift and one that we see just work amazingly well around that space. So, and in fairness to like a lot of the trades out there, it is true. Like you can't, like as much as you would like to be able to know, okay, well, I mean, so like we use some of our solar guys, for example, right? Like they kind of know before they get to site, if they do discovery well, what that project's going to be worth. Like they kind of know, okay, we need this many panels. We can see it on the map. We can know how many panels we can get on there. We know we need this inverter and we need this many battery units, right? They kind of know. So it's going to cost, I reckon, this much. So when they go out to site, it's essentially like, okay, well, let's look for some variables that we couldn't see from the sky. Some of those variables might be, you know, where can we stick the battery unit? Do we need to run cabling to it? You know, like that kind of stuff, right? Or can we squeeze an extra couple of panels up here somewhere to, you know, improve the output? Maybe, right? But they wouldn't know. And that becomes part of the process. It's like, okay, well, listen, based on what you've told us here, like I'm pretty sure you're going to be package A, which is 25K. That sound right? Yeah, good. Okay. So I want to come out to site because I want to make sure that I can see. I just want to check for some other variables just to make sure we haven't missed anything. Sometimes we might be able to squeeze an extra panel up. You know, sometimes we might be able to get an extra battery on or, you know, might run some cabling. Does that make sense? Yeah, cool. Okay. Well, when we do that, we're just going to do some checks and then we'll be able to book you in. And so here's the key. Instead of trying to get a deposit, like we say to them, we have a system in place where we can schedule you in for your installation date according to whenever suits you. It's $500, but it just means that we can lock you in and give you priority. Called scheduling fee. And it's a game changer. It's an absolute game changer because deposit means, oh, shit, I've got to put a deposit down. And it's like this connotation associated with it. Well, scheduling fee is like,
non-refundable?
Okay, you can make it refundable. It doesn't really matter. Okay. The point is they're pulling their wallet out.
Right.
You're turning a site visit into a cash collected scenario, right?
Correct. Yeah. There's so many ways to spin it. It comes down to finding the way to angle it in a way that is like, correct. Yeah, that makes sense. That's a no-brainer.
Yeah. But the point is if you handle those objections and you educate them about what's coming in discovery before you can get out there, they know it's coming.
Yeah.
They know you're going to go do some checks and then you're going to take a scheduling fee. Then you're going to go back and give them an actually definitive quote that's going to fall within the estimate you've given them. It's like there's nothing else to answer.
Yeah. It's like, and the clear, to your point earlier, like a confused, and this is not exactly what you said, but this is what I'm paraphrasing, like a confused mind doesn't buy. Like, right. You know, if you, the clearer you can make that process, the more the client knows what's coming next, the more you're greasing the gears, so to speak, to close the deal and move on.
So again, like it's about, like that whole conversation around content, essentially what you're doing is you're communicating. It's like, how do we make sure that at every stage of our process, the customers or our not yet customers understand, okay, well, this is what's going to be coming next. This is what that looks like.
Yep.
This is what we're obligated to do. This is what they're obligated to do. This is like just laying it out on a platter for them. Like this is exactly what's going to, and it's a massive conversion improver because the people, like customers, will understand they're part of a process.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay. I can see right here. Like, this is where I am. I'm going through this introductory call right now to figure out. And then next stage is going to be a site visit. And at site visit, I'm going to be able to go like lock in a job. And I know the price. Like, it's like just,
I know ding, before. Ding, 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 ding. Yeah. So now I know before I'm even calling you that at the site visit stage, I'm going to be giving a $500 scheduling fee or whatever it is that's part of your process.
Right. Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing actually, and plus it's good for everybody because the customer knows exactly what's next. It's like, I know what to expect. It's not like, well, you know, is this guy going to call me back? You know, he hasn't called me in 2 days or, you know, it's just, that client experience is one that we can often tend to overlook or not leverage as fully as we should.
We had one of our clients come on the podcast a little while back, who's, when he came to us, his close rate from like site visit to job accepted was 15%. And then the process that we deployed and customized for him based around those principles. And he also was able, as a result of it being such a huge success, move from physical site visit to purely remote. So just like video conference, Google Meet scenario, his sales process went, and I will say a disclaimer at this point is this podcast we recorded maybe a couple of months ago, so the stats there might have changed since then. But when he started doing it, it was 15%, and like at the point of the recording of the podcast, he was closing 100%. 100% of his site visits were closing, and they were all remote.
That's insane.
Every one of them.
That's incredible. Yeah. Talk about predictable growth or predictable sales.
He doubled his business in five months.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's absolutely amazing.
So again, I think it's just like that. Like when you, if you want to improve that ecosystem, I think overarching, it's just okay. How do I reduce friction points, and how do I add value at each stage of a defined process, so that people know where they stand and they know what's coming next?
Yeah, I love that. I mean, another way you could say it is, where do I stop and analyze? Like, where am I losing the deal? Mm. Right, it's when I go out and do the site visit. Well, why? Because they had no idea what the things cost. Yeah. Okay, let me educate them before the site visit. You know, it's like reverse engineering. Where am I losing the deal? Where's the break point? Where's the fall off point? Where's the most common, like, I wasted my time there. You know, okay, how do we fix that? How do we go upstream and solve for that?
So there are numbers that are obvious to measure, which are numbers typically that relate to, you know, like how many jobs you've closed and, you know, cash collected and project value and that kind of stuff. But then the non-obvious numbers, and these are the numbers that we measure fanatically in the agency, are the following. We know how many leads they've got, right? That's because we can see that at our end. We want to know how many discovery calls were made, how many site visits were booked. So using our system, a site visit means they've qualified. How many site visits ended up in a cash collected scenario, and then how much overall project value cash collected. So from those numbers, we can look at the business and we can say, okay, well, if you've had this many leads come in and you've only had this many discovery calls, you've got a problem with your triage. Like, you're not following up on your leads quick enough. If you've got this many site visits and you've only had this many much cash collected scenario, then we know you've got a problem with your sales process.
Yeah.
And you're not doing your job in discovery. And then if we go, okay, well, you've had this much cash collected, but they're not closing and the job's closed, and we're like, okay, then you've got a serious problem there with your follow-up or whatever it might be.
Yes.
So at each stage of that, we can dial in and we can train the clients on the various issues they're having within the different – and some of those aren't obvious.
Yeah,
right. Some of those are not obvious. Like, when we had a client come to us, you know, a little while back, and, you know, she was like, well, when we went through the onboarding course, like, okay, we did 20 proposals last month and we've closed one. And I'm like, it's easy. You guys aren't following up on your proposals. You haven't got a process there. She's like, I know.
And you knew that without even being there.
Exactly. And that was like, that's conversations like this. I'm like, okay, you're not following up on proposals. And it's like, oh, yeah, you're right. We're not. Like, simple. That's the easiest thing in the world to fix. And now they're crushing it.
What's cool about that is you're like the doctor. You're the doctor or the expert coming in saying, I can tell you exactly why you're feeling sick.
But the point is, though, it's like, just not like, and it ties into what you were saying, like, knowing your numbers. But knowing them at what point, like, they're sort of benchmarks, right? Like, if you can go, right, the numbers here need to be this, 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 this. And if they're not, then how do we train to improve that? And the 1% improvement thing every time, like, you don't have to go through all different stages. It's just like, how do we improve, make these micro improvements? But the biggest mover, I can tell you right now, regardless of the business, is always discovery.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah.
So now we're implementing now. We're actually doing discovery for clients. Like, we've got guys. So when we generate their leads, we'll actually do the discovery for them. So we generate the leads and we'll set the qualified bookings for them, because, like, we know we'll just do it better. And just so when they're rocking up the job, we know, like, we're going to be sending you to a job where you should be collecting cash. And if you're not, you're fucking it up at your end. Like, there's something we need to train you on.
Yeah, that's incredible. You know, one of the – probably the big – the thing that moved the needle the most for us at Tassie Landscaping as we were developing and honing our sales process is, what was really hard to do was to educate the customer as to what things cost. Like, that was hard. And so what we did, we developed this thing we called the Project Planner on TassieLandscaping.com's website, where we made it a requirement that they fill out this Project Planner before the salesperson would come out and do the site visit. So if you don't want to fill it out, well, then fine, we're not going to come. You know, it was like a non-negotiable. You have to fill this thing out.
Like a form?
It's a visual image-based form, really, but it's like this interactive experience of, like, all the products and the services that the company offers, and with, like, small, medium, large kind of, like, brackets and then descriptions and images with each one and price ranges with each one. So the client can literally just kind of browse through this image oriented form, so to speak, and be like, ah, small, medium, large, see the descriptions and the pictures. Like, I want the medium of this, the large of that, the small of this. And then right at the bottom, it's saying, okay, you're looking at 40 to 80 grand. Is that cool? And it was awesome because instead of the really awkward, what's your budget conversation, it was like the client could spend 3 evenings together with their spouse or partner reviewing it, discussing it. What do we want to do? Do you want to, you know, how hard do we want to go? And by the time they submit that thing, they're already mentally committed.
Do you know what the best thing about that is, I think, as well? And like, we've been doing a similar thing at the agency, like where we have like our opportunity assessment. When people come to us, I mean, I did it for years before we had salespeople on board, truthfully, because now they kind of handle it. But like, I'd have this form where they'd fill out. And the best thing about the form was it would probe areas they hadn't considered.
Right.
So they'd come to you for something, but what they really want is something. And this was an observation. I was like, people are coming to us all the time and not really knowing what they want.
Yeah.
Like, and then, so, you know, they say, oh, okay, I want a website. But they're like, okay, do you want a website or do you want to show up on search engines more?
Yeah.
Or would you also like a way that you can re-engage with your existing customers? Yes. So, and all these things lead to solutions, right? But they may not have, they hadn't considered it at that point. Right. They just come and just go, I want a website.
Right.
And the same thing for probably what you did with that survey. It's like, well, these are all the other things. Have you considered this? Because yes. There's without, I mean, for someone like you that actually does the thing, you see it all day long. But for someone out there that's doing it for the first time, they have no idea.
Right. And you know, what sometimes would happen is they would call the office, we'd book the appointment and send them the form. And 10 minutes later, they call back and then cancel the appointment because they're like, I had no idea that a swimming pool is $200,000. It's like, sorry, you know, and some people are like, well, you just lost the job. Surely you'd have been able to close. It's like, no, you just saved yourself hours and hours of time.
But, and here's the thing, right? You might have lost that opportunity right there and then, but this is what I was saying about earlier. Like, a lot of the cases, it's due to ignorance. They just don't know what the costs are involved in getting that service. So if they understand that, and sure, that opportunity right for them right there and then is not right, but looking forward, it may well be.
Yeah.
Don't disregard the contact. Just close that opportunity, but keep the contact on your communication loop, because the more you can educate them, the more they understand, the more likely they are to go ahead at some point.
Yeah. And there's people that literally, and there's stories of people that went through that process were like, oh yeah, not right now, but they would save because they genuinely wanted this, they had this vision for their backyard or whatever. And 3 years later they call back, okay, we're ready.
You know? Right. I had someone reach out to me yesterday and they were inquiring about, they do business finance for electric vehicles. And they said, oh, are you interested in this? And I said, I am interested, actually. Send me some information on it. So they did. And I was like, that's actually super useful. And they said, oh, are you interested in, like, is this a now thing? And I said, no, it's not, because I've got to upgrade the solar on my house. Like, it's not a now thing for me. But, like, knowing that, and we'll see what happens. I mean, if I become part of an education camp, like, I'm interested in that product. I really am. And we'll see how well they nurture between now and the time that I actually decide, okay, well, let's pull the trigger on this and do it.
And that nurturing could very well influence whether you do it in a year or 5 years or never.
Correct. Exactly right. And so that's why I've got these questions in my head, like, okay, I've got to upgrade the solar on the house. And like, let's see how they handle that without me actually asking the question, you know, because if they can answer some of those objections before I, like that I've got going on in my head right now, I'll probably do it. Like, we're going to upgrade the car very soon anyway. I've been shopping around. Like, let's see how good they are at it. Whether I go buy another diesel or I go buy an EV.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but it's the same for you guys out there, right? Like, just like, you got to keep that in the back of your head. The guy who communicates and educates the best will always win.
Yeah. It's 100% correct. I could not agree more. You know, and the other thing that kind of was the key component to that whole project planner was there are literally numbers on that thing, right? And so the key point there, which ties back into the first episode we did, is like, you have to know your numbers. Like, if there's any hint of doubt in your, well, maybe I am charging too much. Maybe I don't need, you know, maybe I don't. If there's any hint of doubt in that, clients will smell that like a shark smells blood in water.
Yeah, totally.
And the moment, and you've lost it, like whether you're right or wrong, or you just didn't have the confidence to stand there and be like, well, I understand the fact that you're wanting an $80,000 project, but you only have 40, but you have to, in your own head as the contractor, that's not my fault. You know, like, you want something that you can't afford, but, oh, your budget's 40. Now I'm the expert. Let me see if I can help you achieve what your vision is with 40. And you're negotiating on scope, never on your own price.
Yeah.
That's definitely key.
It's called posture.
Yeah.
I had this conversation with our sales team yesterday. I'm like, stop trying to like sell people if they haven't, if it's not the right fit for them. Like,
exactly.
If it's the right fit, sell them. You know, give them that product which will help them get their outcome. But if it's not, like, just be upfront with them, you know? And like, we got this whole situation with, oh, you know, the key common smoke screen objections. Oh, I need to go speak to my wife. And oh, I need to go check with my account. Oh, it's bullshit. Like, it's all bullshit. Like, at the end of the day, it's, I say to the guys, just handle that objection up front. Like, you know, listen, I don't want to waste your time and I don't want you to waste our time. If this is a fit for you, are you ready to go ahead? Because, like, we've, truthfully, they are. They're like, they're super busy, the guys over in sales. Like, they want to onboard the right people. They don't want to waste time. And it doesn't, again, necessarily mean that the contact's not right at that point in time, but it just means they probably need to go through some content before they are ready, which we can do easily. We've got it, you know? So just plug them into that and then let the content do its job.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Anyway,
I feel like we could talk all day on this.
it's a fun one because it's like, it's when you crack the code, so to speak, and when you start getting some things right, you start saving time, you start closing jobs that are actually profitable, you're more systemized and more processed, which gives you more freedom. It makes you feel like you own a business instead of the business owning you. Like, there's so many benefits to nailing this.
Mm, totally. Well, man, look, I just want to thank you for your time. This has been an awesome, awesome conversation. I know you've actually left behind, there's a resource there where you've got like a webinar, 4 ways to close more jobs.
Yeah.
I'll put some links to that in the show notes for you guys if you want to go check it out. But yeah, I just want to thank you for your time, Weston. So just again, for you listeners and viewers out there, Weston's from Synced Up, SynkedUp.com. I'll put some links to them in the show notes there. There's also a resource page, which I can put some links to as well. But, mate, thanks so much for your time. It's been
absolutely
awesome.
It's been a pleasure. And if you want to see that project planner that I was talking about more visually, I share videos and stuff of it inside that webinar.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, people can actually see it and see how it works and how the interactive process kind of feels.
Yeah, sweet. Well, I'll like I say, guys out there, I'll put links to it in the show notes so you can head across there and grab it. But look, if you guys had any questions or if you got anything that really, you know, you found of interest in that podcast or anything maybe that we didn't cover and you would like us to, I'm pretty sure Weston would be more than willing to get back on the show and answer some of those questions. So yeah, just post it, like, let us know in the comments or let us know in reply to the emails or wherever you see this content come through. And yeah, we'll get them answered for you. And I'd also like to know some of your experiences. What's been moving needle for you guys on sales? Is there anything that's been super key for you to, you know, really make a difference when it comes to closing more deals, improving close rate, better customer experience, or anything that we've sort of covered in this episode? Let us know in the comments. And if you're watching this on YouTube, please like and subscribe. That way you'll get notified of upcoming episodes. Weston, thank you for your time, brother.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
We'll chat again in the future.
Absolutely.
That's a wrap.
New Zealand-based home renovation company, 6,593% ROAS. Sydney-based solar company, 2,700% ROAS. Hunter region-based bathroom renovation company, 5,616% ROAS. Melbourne-based building company, 13,182% return on ad spend. Adelaide-based solar company, 2,881% return on ad spend. Guys, the list goes on and on. If you're a trade-based business and you work with projects like roofing, solar, bathroom renovations, kitchen renovations, anything like that, head across to tradie.wiki/pod for podcast. tradie.wiki/pod for podcast. Book in a conversation. It is game changing.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. I hope you enjoyed that podcast. Please, if you did, head across to iTunes and leave us a review. We would very much appreciate that. Anyway, if you are a project-based trade business and you work in solar or bathroom renovations or kitchen renovations or roofing or something along those lines, and you would like to see some of the results that we've been showcasing in our marketing on for your business, thousands of percent return on ad spend, 2,000, 3,000, 5,000, 7,000,
13,000% return on ad spend, please head across to tradie.wiki/pod for podcast. That's tradie.wiki/pod for podcast. It will be well worth the conversation, and I can't wait to chat with you. Ciao.